So there's a joke that people use to try to explain all of the holidays. It goes something like this: they tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. Now, the fact of the matter is it's not entirely true. There's a part that's true and a part that's not true. The part that's not true is that really every chag has its own meaning and its own purpose and its own teachings. The part that's true is that in every chag, we eat. Even in Yom Kippur, there's eating involved. But the fact is that the eating doesn't come to its peak until you reach Pesach. On Pesach, the very holiday is centerpiece. The very holiday centerpiece is eating, is the Seder. And that really shouldn't come as a surprise to us, because if you take a look in this first source in Shmot Perek Yud Bet, so the word eat appears 19 times in the chapter. And so really, eating is a key word in the introduction of the whole celebration of Pesach. Now, there's also another interesting key word. If you take a look at Pasuk Yud Aleph, so it says, V'kacha tochlu oto motnaim chagurim. So it says, you will eat the Pesach with your waist girded. Okay, now this word girded or belt, chagurot, is a key word that's only found 8 times in the entire Torah. This is the second appearance of the word. The first appearance is in the second source here in Bereshit Perek Gimel, where it talks about the sin of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden after they sinned. So they realized they were naked. And if you take a look at the last verse in this section, so Pasuk Zion says, V'tipakachna einei shnehem, and both of their eyes were open, that is Adam and Eve's, V'yedu ki arumim heim, and they knew they were naked, V'yitperu alei teina, and so they sowed for themselves leaves of fig, V'yasu lahem chagurot, and they made themselves these belts or girdles or some kind of covering. So now, what are we supposed to learn from this? Well, there's definitely a connection between the chapter that talks about the celebration of Pesach and the chapter that talks about the sin of Adam and Eve, not only because they use the word chagurot, but also because in chapter 3 of Bereshit, the word eat appears 18 times. So the word, so eating is also a key element in the story of Adam and Eve in the garden, and it's a key element in the Jews celebrating the Exodus from Egypt. But what exactly does this help us to understand anything? What do these chagorot have to do, these belts, what do they have to do with the belts from the Garden of Eden versus the belts from leaving Egypt? So if you take a look at this third source, so the Ibn Ezra explains, what are these chagorot that Adam and Eve tied? Well, they're lahastir ervatam. The whole point was to cover their nakedness, which seems to be pretty obvious. But what does that have to do with when the Jews were leaving Egypt? So the Gemara talks about what exactly was this tree, the tree of knowledge that the Jews sinned with, I'm sorry, that Adam and Eve sinned with. And one of the opinions is that of Rabbi Nehemiah, who says, Te'ena haya, it was a fig tree. She bedevasha kilkalu, bo nitkanu, because with that they sinned is that which they fixed their sin. Shenemar v'yitperu alei teina, as it says that they sowed fig leaves. So now, it seems pretty logical. They sinned with fig leaves, they sowed fig leaves. But the Gemara brings many opinions what the Torah, the tree of knowledge is, and it's not necessarily trying to come to an understanding of which tree, but it's rather trying to come to an understanding about what we learn from the whole incident. So what Rabbi Nehemiah is really teaching is a logical thing, that what you sin with is how you fix the sin. Sort of a midah keneged midah kind of an idea. And so he's saying that these chagorot, these belts, somehow fixed the sin of Adam and Eve eating from the tree of knowledge. Now, many commentators try to answer the question, in what way are these belts connected to the sin of eating from the tree? So one example I bring for you here in this source, it says, Daf al Daf in Sanhedrin, it's the Chatam Sofer, and he says, Katav she ta'a Adam HaRishon ba'asro yoter mi pri ha'ilan. ואסר גם את הנגיעה בעץ, ולכן נכשל בזה, ולכן התוודות על שגגתו אשר שגג. Now, what he said, what the Chatam Sofer is referring to is a midrash that explains that how did Eve fall for the snake's seductions to eat the tree? So Eve said, "We're not allowed to eat from it, and we're not allowed to touch it." But we know that God only said, "You're not allowed to eat from it." So now the snake said, "Oh, what? You can touch it. Nothing's going to happen." And he pushed her into the tree, says the Midrash. And when she saw that she didn't die from touching it, so the snake said, "See, it's all baloney. You can eat from the tree." And so she did. And so the Midrash says that where did Eve get this idea? Adam HaRishon made this fence around the law of the tree. He didn't want her to eat from it, so he said, "Don't even touch it." And so we see that this was a problem. You're not supposed to make legal fences that are too wide that end up making people not do anything, and then they end up sinning. Okay? So what the Chatam Sofer says is that they made these belts of the fig leaves, and so if the sin was that they shouldn't have said don't touch it, so now they're really touching it. They made clothes touching themselves. And so this is the fix. Now, of course, you can understand that this is a nice attempt to explain the Gemara, but it really falls short of really explaining the whole story, because we all know that the sin was eating the tree and not touching it, which was a side thing, which is a midrash. And so it doesn't really help us understand what was going on there. But if we take a look at what really was the sin, so in Bereshit Perek Gimel Pasuk Vav, so it says, V'teireh ha'isha ki tov ha'etz l'machal v'ki ta'avahu le'inayim. The woman saw the tree that it was good to eat, and it was a desirous to look at. It was the desire of the eyes. A desire of the eyes is basically the aesthetic. Man falls for the aesthetic. We all like to enjoy ourselves, and we all want this sort of aesthetic pleasure. This, says Rav Soloveitchik, is the root of all sin. What is the root of all sin? Not that you enjoy the aesthetic. Of course, that's part of humanity, and we should enjoy ourselves. However, what happened here was that Adam and Eve chose to indulge the aesthetic over the moral. And that, says Rav Soloveitchik, is the root of all sin, when we place the moral over the aesthetic. Now, the aesthetic, okay, comes in many forms. One is eating, okay, which is really the most accessible thing that Adam and Eve had at the time, was to eat from the tree. But really, it's just a symbol of indulging the aesthetic when you're not supposed to. And the ultimate indulgence of the aesthetic is, of course, the sexual, which is what the Zohar says here. Lamadnu ka'asher nitgaber ha'yetzer hara ba'adam, eino mitgaber ele ba'arayot. The yetzer hara, the inclination to indulge yourself, if you will, comes to its greatest strength in sexuality. And so this, I suggest, is really the answer to our question, how do the chagorot, how do these belts that covered their nakedness come to atone for the sin of eating from the tree? The reason is that the sin was indulging the aesthetic. And so covering their nakedness is really trying to atone or cover or acknowledge that we need to put a girdle around our aesthetic indulgence, the nakedness being the ultimate symbol of that, and the ultimate use of that, the ultimate indulgence of it. In any case, so now we try to go back a little bit to our question about what does this have to do with Pesach, and we get to another opinion in the Gemara about what was the tree of knowledge. So it says here, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Chita haya. It was wheat. There was a wheat tree. So again, they're not talking about explicitly a tree and explicitly what they were talking. They're trying to teach us a lesson. And so Rabbi Yehuda here is saying, they ate wheat. Why does he say that? Why does he propose that they ate wheat? That there was a wheat tree, as it were. She'ein hatinok yodea likro abba ve'ima ad sheyitom tam dagan. Because the child doesn't know even how to speak mother father until it's eaten wheat, until it's eaten bread. Okay. Now what he's saying here is that there's a part of human development that you reach sort of some kind of knowledge, some kind of cognitive understanding at the same time that you're able to digest wheat, that you're able to digest food. So the two come together, and so he is suggesting that there is a connection between eating wheat and gaining knowledge, and so therefore he suggests that the tree of knowledge was somehow connected to eating wheat. Now why this is interesting is that you'll see here in this explanation on the Gemara here, it says, "De mahai taima, for this very reason, gam keim mevarchin lechem mishneh al hapat b'Shabbat. For this very reason, we bless on two loaves of bread on Shabbat. Lefi sheyesh omrim she'etz she'achal adam harishon chita haita. Because people say, there is this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that the tree of knowledge was wheat. Lachen litaken et cheto ochlim pat. And so in order to fix the sin of the original sin of eating from the tree, we eat bread in a sacred context. And so that also makes a lot of sense. If they ate wheat, and so now we eat wheat products in a holy way to make a fix to the way they ate it in an unholy way. And then this brings us to Pesach. Pesach is the ultimate eating. We eat matzah, we eat wheat, and we eat it in the ultimate sacred context of the Chag. And so that eating comes to fix the eating that they did in Gan Eden. And that's exactly what Rav Tzadok Milublin says. Look what he says on the underlined part. Ba mitzvah rishona, b'torah ba'achilat Pesach. So now you have to say, he says the very first mitzvah in the Torah is eating the Pesach. So there's a question here because everyone knows that the first mitzvah in the Torah is Acholish Azeh Lachem, that you're supposed to make you're supposed to fix the months, the first month, according to the sighting of the moon. So apparently what Rav Tzadok Milublin is referring to is the first mitzvah that all of Israel can do, because the fixing of the months is done by the Sanhedrin. In any case, it's a side point. But he's saying here now, Achilat mitzvah. When we eat the Pesach, we're eating according to a commandment. Sheba letaken hakilkul shel adam harishon, shehu shorash hasatat hanachash lahachnis ta'ava ba'achila. So he says, we are, by our eating according to a mitzvah, according to a commandment, we are fixing the eating of Adam Harishon, of Adam and Eve, that ate when the snake inserted this negative, desirous eating. Uba mitzvah ha-pesach letakena pgam. And so the eating of the Korban Pesach fixes this damage. Ubizman hazeh, she'en lano pesach, yesh achilat mitzvah, matzah, umaror, umevarchin alehen, asher kinsham levzavatzi vanu. So he says, today, when we don't eat Korban Pesach, we still have mitzvah eating of matzah and maror, which we say, asher kinshano, that you sanctified us and you commanded us. And so we have this fixing of what happened in Gan Eden by what we do by celebrating Pesach, because our eating is with the eating according to the command, and their eating was eating against the command. Okay? But there's still a very strange question here. In what way can eating fix anything? I mean, eating is just something that we must do, that we feel what Rav Soloveitchik says is a biological pressure to eat. How can you say that we've done anything spiritual here by just eating? We're hungry, we eat. Rav Soloveitchik, if you turn over the page, says, if when animals are hungry, they eat. So if you look at this quote, he says, at the root of the halachic conception of the Suda lies a problem which has assailed the minds of our sages. Man responds to the biological pressure to take nourishment. He has no choice in the matter. So acts the brute, the beast of the field, and he goes on to name all the animals. There is nothing human or meaningful about the act of consuming food. Rav Soloveitchik explains that this is so embarrassing for the great philosophers of yore that he says that the Greek philosophers known as the Stoics and the Cynics, they were embarrassed to eat in public, that they would eat in seclusion because they didn't want to look like animals. Rav Soloveitchik explains that Judaism came and brought a gift to humanity called the Seuda, the sanctified meal. And he said, in this meal, in a special way of eating, we can elevate our eating from that of an animal to that of a human. Even more than that, Rav Soloveitchik says, where it's marked page 6, Judaism developed a new institution, the Seudah. It is neither an ordinary meal nor a feast. It is more than that. It is the crucible in which the bread of man is transposed into the bread of God. So now the question is, how do we do that? Rav Soloveitchik gives 4 points. There are 4 ways which man eats differently than an animal. The first one is selectivity. Animals, in general, eat pretty much anything that they find edible. Man, on the other hand, has the capability of choosing. You can choose to eat kosher. You can choose to eat healthy. You can choose all kinds of ways to eat. The second thing is awe or wonder. So animals do not have any awe or wonder when they eat. Animals, they're hungry. They eat. They move on. Rav Soloveitchik explains it's an entirely mechanical process. Man, on the other hand, can take a step back and he can say, wow, I'm taking something from nature, I'm putting it in my mouth, I'm processing in my body, and I get energy from this. That's amazing. So we need to take a step back and be able to wonder. This wonder is supposed to bring us to the wonder of all of creation and then bring us to the wonder of the Creator Himself. The third thing is companionship. Rav Soloveitchik explains that animals in general eat by themselves. And even when they don't eat by themselves, they eat for themselves. Even if they're in a pack and they attack a prey, it's only self-serving. They're not interested in the rest of their friends in the pack. They're interested in being in a pack because it's easier to get the prey. And then they go off and eat on their own. And even if they don't eat on their own, they're interested in satisfying their own natures. And so we need to eat as a group in order to express our companionship, to express our compassion for the other. And finally, the fourth thing is meaningful context. We're supposed to try to eat with some kind of meaning. Animals, of course, don't eat with any other meaning than satisfying their hunger. Man can eat with meaning. There can be some kind of context. And, of course, not every meal that man eats can have a meaningful context. In fact, not every meal can have all 4 of these elements. However, on the paradigm meal of the Seudah, of the Seder, I believe that each and every one of these elements is expressed. Not only I believe it's expressed, but it has a symbol. And the symbol, I would like to suggest, is one of the 4 foods that we eat on the Seder, that each one has its own special bracha. We say a special bracha on Pesach, Matzah, Umaror, Asher Kedishanu, Mitzvah, Tzivanu, Al Achilata Pesach, Al Achilata Matzah, Al Achilata Maror. And there's one other food that we eat with a special bracha, and that's the karpas, which we say, Borei Pri Ha'adama. So now let's try to mix and match each one of these 4 things. Rav Soloveitchik doesn't suggest this. This is something of my own, so if you don't like it, you're free to disagree with me. But I think that there's definitely something to base it on, and I'll try to show you that as we go along. The first element that separates man's eating from animals' eating is selectivity. And this is symbolized by the maror. Why? Because in general, people don't select to eat maror. And in fact, on the Seder, we tell everybody why we've selected to eat the maror. Al shumma shemereru hamitzrim et chaye avotenu b'mitzrayim. We are eating this food specifically. We have selected it to eat to symbolize that the Egyptians made our ancestors' lives bitter. So that's the first element of elevating our meal. We've selected something specifically. The second one is, here it says in Hebrew, plia, or wonder. I believe that the karpas symbolizes wonder. First of all, it's the only thing that we say, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Borei Pri Ha'adama. We're acknowledging the Creator. We've taken a step back and we're saying, wow, here is some food that energizes me and I'm blessing the Creator of the world. I'm saying, this is an amazing creation. Borei, you God, have created the fruit of the land. But there's much more to the karpas and its connection to wonder. The Mishnah Berurah here quotes the Gemara, or paraphrases the Gemara, I should say, and he says, why do we eat karpas? So in the middle of the first line of the Mishnah Berurah, it says, Vehine inyan tibul hayerek b'mashke hu mitakanat hachamim kedei lahatmiya et hatinokot. We do this in order to make the children wonder, to express amazement. What are we doing here? That is what the children are supposed to ask, and that's exactly the whole purpose of the karpas. has no other reason but to make people wonder and say, wow, what are we doing here? What is this about? And there's an interesting question here brought in the Chashukei Chemed. The Chashukei Chemed is a question and answer halachic book written by Rav Zilberstein, who is the son-in-law of Rav Eliashiv, and he was asked a question: what if somebody is in the hospital, lo aleinu, and he's in bed and he's by himself and he has to do his seder? So he asked, why should I do the karpas? I mean, the karpas is for kids to ask questions. There's nobody with me, no kids to ask any question. So he quotes the Shulchan Aruch HaRav that says that Chazal did not make any distinctions. They made an order of the seder. These are the elements that you go through, and they didn't say, if there are no kids, so don't do this, and so you have to do it. But I would like to suggest that you have to do it because it's not just about awakening the amazement in kids. It's about awakening the kid who is amazed inside you. The whole purpose of the seder is to learn more about our people, about our history, about our heritage, about our laws. And you do that by asking questions. And if you're not amazed enough to ask a question, so your learning is going to be, let's just say, dull. And so you are supposed to awaken in yourself the child who knows how to ask questions. So that's what the karpas is, really the symbol of taking a step back and saying, wow. The third element is the chabura, the companionship that Rav Soloveitchik mentioned, and this fits very nicely with the Korban Pesach, because we see in the Psukim, v'kchu lahem ish se lebayit lebeit avot se lebayit, we're supposed to take a korban for the whole household, and if there's not enough people for the korban in one household, we're supposed to get together another household. The Mishnah talks about a chabura, a fellowship to eat the Korban Pesach. So the Korban Pesach very much represents getting together. And really that getting together is making the Leil HaSeder, which also Rav Soloveitchik says has two elements. The two elements of companionship, of consideration for the other, are expressed in two different ways. One is that we give to the other, like what says here, Halachma Anya Di Achlu Avtahana Ba'arab Demizraim Kol Dichvin Yeteh Ve'echol Kol Ditzrich Yeteh Ve'yifsach. We invite all those who don't have food or all those who don't have a place. We bring in people who don't have. That's one way of giving in this chavura of the Pesach. But there's another way, says Rav Soloveitchik. The Shulchan Aruch teaches, Chayav Adam la'asok b'hilchot ha-Pesach u'b'yitziat Mitzrayim v'lesaper b'nisim v'leflaot she'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'avotenu ad she'tachtefenu she'na. We're supposed to learn about Pesach all the night until we fall asleep. This learning, says Rav Soloveitchik, is also a giving to the other. It's also when we give of ourselves and our knowledge to each other, we're exchanging of ourselves and we're caring, we're expressing some kind of concern for the other. So this is all about the companionship which is created at the Leil HaSeder. And finally, the last piece that elevates man's eating from animals eating is the Heksher Mashmoti, the meaningful context. And this Rav Soloveitchik explains as follows. In the quote here, he says, Judaism tries to convert the meal into a covenantal feast. What is the covenant if not the unity of all time dimensions? The covenant combines the beginning with the end of days. The covenant redeems the individual from his historical solitude. What Rav Soloveitchik is explaining is that if you're not part of the covenant, you're not really part of anything bigger than your own life. And so you're sort of lost in the flow of time. And your life loses sort of its meaning. Your life really takes on meaning if you can connect it to the past and to the future. And that's what the covenant is about. The covenant is about something that happened a long time ago and is in the process through you of becoming something that will be great in the future. That's what the covenant is about. That's what the covenantal meal is about. That's what all the meals of the holidays are about. Now, how do we see this expressed? Well, the last element that we mentioned is the matzah. And I believe the matzah expresses this in almost perfect form, because the matzah really represents two things. On the one hand, we see here in Dvarim Perek Tet Zayin, the matzah is called Lechem Oni, the bread of our affliction. On the other hand, the matzah is called the lechem acherut. It's the lechem of, it's the bread of freedom. Okay, and so now what you have here in the matzah is this duality of the covenant: the lechem oni, the bread of our affliction, representing the past, and the bread of our freedom and geula of redemption, expressing the future. We have both elements expressed and giving meaningful context to the whole meal. And so now that we understand how we elevate our meal from being just eating like animals to eating like human beings, so now we can really understand how is Pesach a fix for what happened in the Garden of Eden. Because really what happened there was that they ate like animals. They ate based on inner drives and urges, and they ate placing the aesthetic over the moral. They went after their own drives and said, these are more important to us than the command of God. And so on Pesach, we flip this around, and we eat based on God's command, even though we do it in a completely aesthetic environment. The Shulchan Aruch teaches that you have to have a beautiful Seder table, and you should bring all the greatest kelim, all of your forks and knives and chinaware, everything that you can to make the Seder an aesthetic experience. But it's all within the context of the halacha, of the command of God. And this, I would like to suggest, also explains why it appeared 18 times the word eat in chapter 3 and 19 times in chapter 12 of Exodus. 18 is the word, is the numerical value of the word chai, of living. And in the chapter in Bereishit of Adam and Eve, they ate like all living creatures. They ate for life. In Shemot, when we learn about the eating of the Seder, so we're doing something above that simple eating. We're taking it one step beyond. And so that's really what it's all about. That's what the eating on Pesach is about. It's about fixing our eating and doing it within the divine command. And that's why we say, Asher Kedeshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al achilat matzah. And bimhera v'yameinu, we should also be able to say, Asher Kedeshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al achilat ha-Pesach. Chag Sameach.